This also, I talked to your dad, and he said you kind of had some conversations about some things and how to kind of maybe manage things and that kind of thing. I'm wondering from your perspective what those conversations were like from the lessons from last year and this year.
Yeah, Dad's right there. He came with the media center with me. he's taking no questions though. No, I mean he's been awesome, right? I mean he's been not only someone I grew up, you know, wanting to be like and wanting to, you know, do his sport, you know, obviously getting me started in racing, supporting me along the way, opened a lot of doors for me. And then for him to still be, you know, supportive, you know, when I'm an adult is great. So he's been, you know, he went on, you know, his whole thing was like through the playoffs was, you know, I see the path, you know, I can see the path to the championship. I can see it. And as we won Martinsville, he's like, it's lit up now. Path is lit up, and I think we drove through the gate tonight, so we have arrived. So it's just cool to have my whole family here, which was very special.
That was Ryan Blaney, the newest NASCAR Cup Series champion. I'm Daniel McFadden, host of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and we are here today to talk about the end of the 2023 season and the crowning of NASCAR's newest champion. And with me, as always, is a sleep-deprived Jared Haas, fresh from the desert in Phoenix, Arizona, to recap Sunday's race at Phoenix Raceway, which was not won by Ryan Blaney. It was instead won by Ross Chastain, which broke a nine-year stretch of the champion winning the race. But in this case, it wasn't so. Ryan Blaney is your new champion. Jared, what did you think of the way Ryan Blaney secured his first career NASCAR Cup Series trophy?
I find it a little ironic that it was Ross Chastain and Martin Truex Jr. battling so hard and Blaney getting so frustrated, almost let Blaney lose himself with the championship, had a couple close moments. Battling Ross Chastain, but we saw the aero advantage being out front with Ross Chastain leading 157 laps. So Blaney didn't take himself out. It looked like William Byron had the best car early on, and Blaney's car was going to run well longer into the run, and we had that caution there with 31 laps. We start with 31 laps to go. So it was a little bit cause concern, but Blaney was able to get it done and finish ahead of Hendrick teammates Kyle Larson, William Byron, and Christopher Bell, who we get into.
We will get to that, but yes, Ryan Blaney is your champion. This, Jared, for me, this was, in my opinion, I don't have an encyclopedic memory. I don't have memories of every championship era finale race. For me, this was the most tense, the most exciting championship race that we've seen in this era, the elimination format era, probably since 2014. I mean, that race came down to a late restart where Ryan Newman, a guy who hadn't won a race, was two laps away from maybe winning the championship, but didn't. Kevin Harvick took it. I know 16 when Johnson won his seventh one. That also came down to a late restart. But for me, just beginning to end, this was a great race at Phoenix, of all places. Going into this race, I was probably one of those people saying, why do we keep going to Phoenix? Let's trade this race around at other places. But after that race, I was like, that was fun. Can't wait till next year. When the checkered flag flew on Sunday, with you there in Phoenix providing coverage for both Front Stretch and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, what was your just initial feeling about the 312 lap race that you just watched?
I mean, Ross Chastain does not care still. He wants to win. Ryan Blaney, it felt very. William Byron was the favorite, and then just Blaney came through. I thought it was really just a two-horse race for that championship. Christopher Bell, you know, and Blaney were starting the back, so it was Byron up front. Larson wasn't able to keep up with Byron. He was able to get him by at the end for third, but it wasn't really that dynamic, exciting championship that NASCAR wants. Of like all four of those contenders right on top of each other. It was getting a little bit close, but chopping away, but Blaney was able to cruise to the championship. They're looking for the moments of like the 2021 Xfinity Series championship when Austin Cindric and Daniel Hemric are battling at the line and Hemric wins that race. They're looking for that note, and I mean the aero advantage is such a big thing here, and I think it really proves that even though Ross Chastain didn't have the fastest car in the last 50 laps, that how important was track position. So I would still rather have it at like Homestead. I know the track you despise.
I don't despise Homestead.
Well, you hated that 2022 race still.
Yeah, that one race.
Yeah. Well, you to my point that this is still an aerodynamic. It's weird that such a short, small track is such big aerodependent and shifting in speed that you can't pass people. That's the bigger issue on that. And these drivers were trying to work meticulous, and you couldn't really pass.
Well, still, when it became clear that this wasn't going to be the championship four guys running 1, 2, 3, 4 or anything like close to that, that really heightened the sense of urgency in the race, for me, anyway, because it was okay. Where, who's going to win the race, and where's the championship
that,
guy
you know,
going?
That doesn't. Who wins doesn't really matter.
I know.
Because you know that's happened in the past too. People win the season finale, but the champion, you know, they'll sometimes finish second or way back in the pack. That doesn't really matter at the end of the day. And it kind of just more or less gets swept under the rug of history, right? I mean, we made mention of the last time that a non-championship playoff driver won the season finale race was before the championship four race. And, you know, people don't really come to mind of, oh, yeah, who won that race, by the way? No, they remember who's a champion. So there's bigger things at play, and it's just the reality situation of the TV time constraints that people, I don't think they really got to see a Ross Chastain interview.
No, they did. They did do a TV interview with.
Did they? Did okay.
Yeah, they didn't show the watermelon smash.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we had to see that via social media.
Yeah.
But a watermelon was smashed.
Yes.
In Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
What the
but
record
that's
show.
That. But that proves my point that it kind of gets masked over by the championship.
Well, I understand. I get that, but like. It was the what if, okay, can Ross Chastain win? Will Blaney actually win? We had a, you know, brief period of time where Kevin Harvick in his final race is up there leading laps, challenging for the lead before he eventually drifted back. But he was in play. He was in the game.
He led laps.
Yeah. Martin Truex, like, he finished
six.
But for a while there, he was there in the top three, challenging, trying to get up to the front.
You look at the note, there's only two drivers that started inside the only two drivers outside the top 10 finished inside the top 10 after this race. That was Blaney who won the championship, started 15th, and Mike McDowell started 19th, but every single one of them, everyone else that started in the top 10 finished up there. So it kind of, I don't want to say more or less proved the difficulty of passing, but again, a lot, 8 of the top 10 started the race up front and finished it up front. The only two drivers that started up front that didn't finish up front was Erik Jones, who started 7th, finished 20th, and Tyler Reddick, who started 10th and finished 22nd.
Dang, what happened to Reddick? Huh. Okay.
But again, this 312 laps through all the chaos, still, most of the top 10 was able to finish there.
Yeah, but we had multiple green flag passes for the lead, which I don't think we could say that.
It's because the cars were difficult to pass.
Yeah.
As you note, where is the lead changes at? So they had here 18 lead changes. In the spring, there was 10. And before that was 11. So there were more lead changes, but quite a bit of them were those side-by-side battles that weren't like the Blaney and Ross Chastain, because they had that quite a bit from like lap 254 to like 262. They were trading the lead back and forth.
But also, like, you know, in that first stage, second stage, before Bell had his brake problem, you had Bell, you had Byron, you had Larson.
Yeah, they worked their way up there. Bell and Blaney did, but it was still early on. They ran outside, you know, they were relatively mired back, and not until the end of stage one they cracked the top 10. It's just a tough track to pass with what they have. It was a little bit better. They're making strides. You know, Martinsville was hopeful, but it was a so-so race.
I guess we're just going to disagree on it. I enjoyed the race. It was like I had more fun watching that race than I remember for any of the Homestead Championship races that I can remember.
Yeah,
I was like, this is we don't know what's going to happen. It's not a surefire result of the championship guys having this thing unlock. So it was just
I'm trying to remember. I mean, William Byron mainly ran, he was the top dog for the championship four, and it was more or less Blaney late in the race. There wasn't that battle between those championship four, trading those, oh, now he's got the championship lead. No, he's got the championship lead. It was pretty more or less set sail.
All right. But anyway, Ross Chastain was the guy who came away with the race win, and we have some audio from him and then Blaney over there, how they dealt with each other during the race. Because when you get down to it, it feels like Ross Chastain, if anybody was going to go up there
and crash the party,
yeah, it would be him. But he's been quiet since Nashville. Back in the summer when he won, he's been missing in action. I know he competed for the win here at Phoenix in the spring last year. It came down to him, Reddick, and Chase Briscoe. So he did have a good race here. Then he also, you know, came up third in the championship race last year.
Yeah, I mean, he was not really close. He got involved with Chase Elliott last year when he spun. But you mentioned that Nashville win. Since that Nashville win before the Phoenix race, he's only finished in the top five times. This was his sixth top 10 since his win at Nashville in June. So this guy made the championship and advanced a round out of this. He only, like I said, most of those came into those playoffs. But, yeah, it's not been with the Trackhouse racing, not what was the 2022 season, which is when really quietly, consistently good, and somehow sneaks his way into a win like this one. Very 2022-esque performance by Ross Chastain.
Yeah, but I wasn't expecting him to compete today, really. He started eighth, mm-hmm. but he wasn't on my mind going into this. But once he was up there, I was like, you know what, yeah. If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be him. And he said, this is where we got our audio from him. He said, you know, after the race that, you know, after he watched the practice broadcast on Saturday, and Dale Jr. had said on it that if anybody in this field is going to go up there and race them and be aggressive, it's going to be Chastain. And Chastain, like, questioned that. Like, would I do that? So here's Ross Chastain on how he arrived at the conclusion that he would race the championship four drivers like any other race.
Well, I'm proud that we won. And I watched practice back yesterday morning, Saturday morning, and I heard Dale Earnhardt Jr. say, like, Ross will be one that'll get up and race these guys. And I paused it, and I was sitting there, and I'm like, what, would I do that? I don't know. That seems kind of aggressive. And then I clicked in, and I didn't really have an answer for myself. Like, I asked myself, would I race them? And I was like, well, I'll race them, but would I, like, he was like, he's going to race them aggressive. He'd be one that'll do it. If there's anybody that'll do it, he will, or however he said it. And I was like, I don't know. Kind of undetermined. And then I got out there and I was like, I'm doing it. I am racing them. But the difference was I'm not going to use my front bumper, front fenders, like side. I'm not going to pinch them up into the wall. I'm not going to fence. Like, I didn't mean to fence Larson at Darlington, but I did it. Like, I was not going to do that. I was not going to drive into the corner. And like, when he cleared me down into one, like, I was like, I'm not going to try to like make it anything other than cross him over and do it clean and then have leverage into three and wrap the bottom. And it worked. And I was like, holy cow. Like, he passed me. He's faster, but I got right back by him. He did not. I don't even think he led the lap. So, yeah, in my mind the whole time. And proud of the precision driving we all did. You know, the only contact was him just in a moment of anger just throttling up in 1 and 2 to drive square into my back bumper. Other than that, no contact. And, you know, that's what I'm here to do.
All right. So, yeah, Ross Chastain, he's the guy. He got the win. He led a career high 157 laps. Mm-hmm. So this was his best race of his career so far. Before this, the most laps he had led was in the Coke 600 earlier this year. So just a great day for track racing, track house racing. But yeah, he did spark the anger of Mr. Ryan Blaney. Which resulted in Blaney dropping a curse word or two in his post-race press conference when Chastain's defensive driving habits came into play. So here is Ryan Blaney on why he got mad at the way Ross Chastain was racing him in the final stage Sunday at Phoenix.
I guess to answer your first question, there's no secret that I can snap on the radio. I mean, that's been my whole life. I mean, that's been my whole career. I mean, it's just kind of what something I do. The fact that Ross said I raced him hard, I mean, the dude blocks three lanes, getting in the corner every lap. I mean, I don't know how I'm racing him hard. When you're looking in your mirror and you're going left and right and left and just following wherever I go, I don't understand how he thinks I'm racing him hard. He's just backing me up to the five, so I have to go. I mean, he's backing me up to Larson to where I'm going to be in trouble. Well, fucking right I hit him on purpose. I mean, yeah. Yes, I hit him on purpose. He blocked me on purpose 10 times. So, yeah, I hit him on purpose. I mean, what do you expect me to do? He's backing me up to the other championship guy, and I got to go. I mean, we were just racing hard, but did I think he was over excessive on the blocks? Yes, very much so. And, yes, did I hit him? Yes, I did. But that's just part of it.
All right, so Jared, did Ryan Blaney, was he warranted in his anger Sunday, especially when he gave Chastain's rear bumper a solid pop in turn 1 and 2 during their battle?
They're racing for two different races.
Yeah.
It's basically the equivalent of sports car racing. You have the race win, and then you have the championship race as well. And those two drivers were getting in the way, and Ryan Blaney wanted to win the overall class as well. So I get his frustration, and I get the more sense, too, that he could have ruined Ryan Blaney's day.
Could have, yeah.
That's the big thing in mind, and, hey, let him go on faster than you, because Blaney was faster than Ross Chastain, and Ross Chastain didn't let him go. And I get it. I would be, too, honestly. I mean, I'm running for from Ryan Blaney's perspective, I'm running for a championship. Yeah. Stop messing with my race. From Ross Chastain's perspective, I'm trying to run a race for my sponsor as well. Trying to impress even more with the new sponsorship with Busch, which we're going to get a little bit into, of, you know, hey, I'm trying to end the season with 2 wins. So it's 2 different races going on. I get the frustration of both drivers looking out for themselves. They're not looking over for the big picture of things. So I get both, but in the day, it's just racing.
I think some of Blaney's frustration probably came from the fact that, like, the last 9 years, the championship 4 guys have kind of had free reign in the championship race. And this was the first time that someone had, like, you know, no, I'm not going to play by that rule. I'm going to put up a fight. And he did it successfully, dominating that race. What do you think about that? Do you think that's part of the frustration, that he wasn't given a pass to just
that's what are you going to say? Oh, go ahead. Just have the championship 4 race by themselves.
But that's the way it's felt like for these, especially these last few years, is that the championship 4 just kind of easily Maybe the conspiracy theory is that NASCAR gives them a little something extra.
Well, it's like, what if you're going to wreck one, wreck the others. But yeah, it's the sense of, hey, guess what? These other drivers, these other 32 drivers that are in this field, Daniel, are in here to do what? To win the race. Mm-hmm. They're not here, oh, yeah, we'll run fifth. We're okay with that. We're going to score for fifth place finish. No. Someone's talking about that. They're asinine. They're just out their behinds. They don't get it. They're racing to win.
All right, so let's do a rundown of the final top 10 results of the 2023 season, Jared.
Yeah, we had Ross Chastain in first, Ryan Blaney in second, Kyle Larson was third, William Byron was fourth, Chris Buescher was fifth, Martin Truex Jr. was sixth, Kevin Harvick was seventh, Denny Hamlin was eighth, Michael McDowell was ninth, and Bubba Wallace rounds out the top 10. One thing to note, the other championship four contender, Christopher Bell, finished last in 36th. This is the first time in history of the championship four format that a championship four contender has finished last race.
And that happened after a brake rotor failed. And he hit the wall. And he said afterwards that was the first time a brake rotor had ever failed. I was like, surely that's not.
No, we had issues at Gateway.
Well, for him. Yeah. For him.
Yeah.
It is bizarre. He was the only guy, Bell was the only driver who didn't finish the race on Sunday. 35 guys were still running at the end, but not one of the championship four drivers. So it was just a weird, it was kind of a strange race. There was only two cautions outside of the stages. One was for Bell's accident, and another one was for Kyle Busch spinning a little bit later in the race. But other than that, it was just a clean run to the finish. Some clean battles between Chastain, Blaney, and those other guys. Some great three-wide racing at multiple points in the race.
There was even one point there was 10-wide racing in the truck series, you know, with that apron.
Yeah.
Where should be the track limits? Do you think there should be grass brought back there at Phoenix?
I don't think there should be grass anywhere. There should be turf. because those them fanning out and going everywhere, that's now a staple of Phoenix. That's why they put the start finish line where it is now.
So you think that tradition of it is the reason why we should be able to have no track limits? Not having people being dumbed down there and wrecking people out there, what we saw at the truck race.
Well, that's the truck series. the Xfinity guys were able
to
go out there.
The truck series is the future.
I know.
Those are the young drivers, I get, but those are going to be the drivers that are going to be pushing it to the limit.
Oh, I know, but guess what? We wouldn't have been in that position in the truck race if not for Corey Heim. Grant Anfinger was going to win the championship. He was going to go running away championship, and then Corey Heim got retaliation against Carson Hocevar and just set off a chain reaction. And
who do you think who's to blame in that situation?
Oh, it's Heim. It's absolutely Heim. Because I don't believe Hocevar chose to wreck Heim before that. That just judging by the reaction that we saw from him on the in-car camera, he was mad that happened.
I get that, and I think that's Hocevar. That's the biggest thing, a big lesson for Hocevar. You are the one that is responsible for the actions inside of your car, whether on purpose or not. And Hocevar put himself in a bad situation that caused Corey Heim to, like I said, get damage and go a lap down. That doesn't make Heim's two wrong doesn't make a right.
No. I
but
agree.
Still, there's lessons to learn for Hocevar. I think Heim...
He affected the outcome of the championship.
Yeah.
By his act of retaliation. He straight up did.
And it's not good. And And it's
that Friday night's race was embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely embarrassing.
And here's the thing: like Heim posted on Twitter, the if you would have saw what he tweeted, you'd have been like, "What?" You would have had no idea what happened. So Corey Heim after the race said, "Thanks, Tricon Garage, Safelite, and Toyota Racing. It wasn't meant to be." That was the tweet that he sent. I would argue this, that that's what makes drivers seem vanilla. You had all this chaos going on. You had, you know, you got involved with Carson. You potentially wrecked Carson Osvar. That's all we had, by the way. Sorry. Thanks, guys.
And then Heim, of course, said it wasn't intentional afterwards. Yeah. He said, oh, side drafting or whatever. It's like, we know we get it. You don't want to be fined like Denny Hamlin, but just
I think that's the tough thing. You need to call a spade a spade, and be like, you should be after the race. Well, yeah, I did because he ruined my championship race. That should be fine in that context. But I mean, there is a difference between intentionally wrecking someone when there was no already consequences to you versus what happened there. But it's not a good look. It wasn't. No. I will agree. It was embarrassing.
And how many overtime laps?
They ran 179 laps, and I think the scheduled this was 150. So 29 overtime laps. The Xfinity race, which was a longer race, was done shorter than the truck race. A third of the field in the truck race wrecked out. A third.
Ugh.
One out of three. A lot of lessons that need to be learned in that truck series race. But by God, we talk about disgrace. And let's transition into something completely opposite with the Cup Series.
Oh, no. Remember, we're talking about the truck race. Ben Rhodes won the championship.
Yeah, Ben Rhodes won the championship.
And then did a repeat performance.
Yeah.
A drunken performance in his post-race.
Dinosaurs are not real, reported by Ben Rhodes.
Jared, so what did you think? What was it like being in the press conference?
I had fun, honestly. You know, that championship weekend, it's okay to be a little bit tipsy. I get, you know, you don't want somebody that's like too egregiously drunk where they're taking off their shirts and slurring and like slouching down on the table. But
declaring the dinosaurs aren't real, y'all.
Yeah. Robert, Pacris.
Jeffrey.
That's the fun type of stuff. You won a championship. You're having fun here.
I saw some people on Twitter who were like, upset at his performance. Like, come on, man. No.
It felt a little bit more showy than 2021, but you know what? He won a championship. Did you win a championship this season?
Nope.
No, unfortunately not. But
I mean, you'll never top the original.
Yeah.
That no one was expecting that to happen when like I was in that room and he came in and it was obvious from the drop. Oh boy.
Well, I mean, he came in this year and poured beer on his crew chief, Rich Lucius, I think it is.
I don't know.
So yeah, that. But still, yeah, he was having fun with this. You know, drunkenness is not a personality, but he was still having fun in the media center for what he needed to do.
Well,
so
my problem last year, the first time,
2021.
Yeah, 2 years ago. That's right. Every other person that was like asking him questions was just trying to still be a professional reporter asking questions about the race. And I was like, guys, no. So this is not a time. This is not the time. So I got
no. I mean, that makes it the best part. He just goes off in those tangents too.
No, but like I felt like I asked the most important question in the entire press conference. Like I got the microphone. I was like, so. When asked the obvious question, how many have you had? And boom. Like it went off. But that was the most fun press conference I've ever been in.
Yeah. But there is a line of having fun and being stupid drunk. He's having fun. He won a championship.
Yeah. But yeah, Ben Rhodes won his second championship, and then the next night,
Stone Cold Cole Custer.
Yeah.
Speaking of beer, had the notorious Stone Cold beer drop when he won the championship. Yeah. That was a really good race and a title contender where all four of them on that last restart were right there.
And, but yeah, he had to pass a few cars to get to the lead. Specifically, he had to get back by Allgaier. Mm-hmm. I know that. But no, that was a very good finish. Very well done. Congratulations to Cole Custer. He wins the title a year after getting demoted from the Cup Series. And I kind of feel like this is good for Custer on another level, because when he was originally in it, there was that year where it was him, Bell, and Reddick. And he kind of felt like they were the big three, mm-hmm. but he still felt like
the third wheel
in that. But he was still winning a lot of races.
Yeah.
But it was still really the Bell and Reddick show. But
it was the the capture back moment of getting those, kind of building off of that success, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't that linear line where people thought, people in the early season thought Cole Custer's going to be a championship for contender. He's been there before. I think he's finished second twice in the championship. And I think he won seven races in 2019.
He won a lot.
Yeah, he won a lot. So, but it was a little bit different season. Struggled a little bit early out of the gate, but was able to redeem himself. I think the bigger thing, though, John Hunter Nemechek felt like his Truck Series title this year. Like what he did was 2 years when he was in the playoffs in the championship race at Phoenix, the Dominic Truck of the Season, championship favorite, faded it away at the end. So I'd say the disappointing standpoint that John Hunter Nemechek was not able to seal the deal, but he's still focused on that's what he was always focused on, but now he can be focused on the Cup Series side of things and be able to go, like I said, Cup Series racing again. And
yeah, I mean, his gamble of dropping after 2020, his 1 year with Front Row Motorsports, which is largely forgettable. I think he had a good run.
He had a handful.
Darlington, maybe?
Yeah, and he had like some decent runs, but not something that was earth shattering.
But he went back down the Truck Series with Kyle Busch Motorsports, did great. I mean, 2021, five wins. 2022, two wins. Third and fifth in the standings. This year, beat everyone. Seven wins.
That was the highest for in NASCAR throughout the top three series. He had the most wins.
Wow.
In the season, so seven. But yeah, it was a good season for John Hunter Nemechek. It's just the hardware is not there for him.
No, it's not. But no, he's going to be back in the Cup Series after four years. Yeah,
2020. 21.
So 3 years.
Yeah, it's returning after 4 years, yeah.
So, yeah, he'll be driving the number 42 for Legacy Motor Club, which...
They're changing to a Toyota, so...
Yeah, they are changing to Toyota.
It's going to be interesting after this... this year was supposed to be their supposed rebrand where they're going to be running up front, and it fell flat in their face.
For the first half of the year, the second half of the year, there was an obvious...
There is an improvement. Yeah, there has been improvement. But the question is how much of this factory support is a Toyota is going to help this team?
Yeah. But at this point, with Legacy Motor Club, how would you compare getting into that ride compared to him driving the 38 back in 2020?
I would say there's more potential to go upward. Feels like, honestly, that Legacy and Front Row are about the same, but I think there's more potential upward trajectory with the Toyota manufacturer support that John Hunter Nemechek can get into, put in that top tier where he's making playoff runs in the Cup Series. I think the big thing now for John Hunter Nemechek, once he gets his bearings in the Cup Series and gets more successful, is closing out that deal.
Yep. All right. So before we go on to actually a pretty full news segment, let's just talk briefly about Kevin Harvick made his last
start,
his 1,299th National NASCAR Series start.
I wrote about that in the article in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette about his final start, NASCAR start, and definitely memorable around pit road.
He was very emotional on pit road.
Yeah.
Like,
surrounded by Delana, his kids, took time to embrace him. And it was such a unique moment to be in that cluster. And he was raised in a cheer with his non-alcoholic Busch.
Was it non-alcoholic?
It was non-alcoholic with all his crew members. And Ryan Preece was there. I think there were probably others as well. I couldn't see. I could definitely see Ryan Preece from my perspective.
I saw Logano in the background on TV.
Yeah. So there was a lot of drivers that were really supportive of Kevin Harvick's career. And, I mean, he had really big shoes to fill, filling in for Dale Earnhardt. And he's accomplished a lot for the sport and still going to be continuing on in the analyst role in the NASCAR on Fox section of the TV. But, you know, it's definitely a special moment for Harvick, even, like, pre-race. They have, like, chalk on pit road to mark where the cars are. And for him, they put the smiley face for Happy Harvick and Forever on there. So definitely some sentimental moments on that. But, I mean, he was looking strong early. He just was losing grip, especially rear grip, as the race progressed. Still finished seventh, still respectable. Yeah. Got a top 10 finish, still led some laps. But definitely... and to go to a track where he's arguably have been one of the best at there, finishing top 10 is respectable.
I'm sure he's undoubtedly just happy that in his final race he was in the mix. Like, you knew he was there.
Yeah.
So, because that doesn't happen. No. That doesn't happen very often. But it was the end of an era. He was the last full-time driver who competed under the Winston Cup banner.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that was 19 years ago when that went away. He's the guy who took over for Dale Earnhardt, which I wouldn't wish on anybody in that situation. But, I mean, he rose to the occasion. And I mean, even though he only won one title in 2014, he left a mark on the sport. And it's just good. One thing I noted in my column at Front Stretch last week was, like, pretty soon there's, like, gonna be every driver who's older than me, a lot of the drivers who are older than me are gonna be gone.
It's just the age of life.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what happens.
Like, this was the first time in the Championship Four that all the Championship Four were younger than me. So
now you tell me how the old veterans journalists that have been here for 20, 30 years feel.
Oh, I know, but it's just weird. It's just weird. It's a weird thing.
Just wait until
taking stock of it.
Just wait until the Championship Four were they were born while you were in college.
Nope. I don't want to think about that. But no, congratulations to Kevin Harvick on a very long career.
Commendable career.
First start was in 1995, October of 1995.
In NASCAR, yeah.
That's no one's going to have that kind of career anymore. Those days are over. Which is sad. I mean, drivers are retiring earlier and earlier now. Like, you have Eric Almirola. How old's Almirola?
I mean, he got up in the sport around the same time as, like, Clint Bowyer and Denny Hamlin.
Yeah.
Because Eric, he was originally the Joe Gibbs developmental driver. That's another thing that's lost in it. He was, you know, he was brought up in the sport around that time. And, I mean, he's 39.
Okay, well.
So, yeah, he's going to be 40 next year. And he wants to spend time with these kids, and he's had another career. He's had a respectable career, 460 Cup starts, and, you know, in the lower series with Xfinity Truck, he's had another 178. So a good career for Eric Almirola, and that full-time season ends as well. He'll probably still be looking for other stuff to just do part-time, but he gets to spend time with his family, and those two books close on Stewart Haas Racing. Big year for Stewart Haas Racing for next year, though. That is going to be the big thing, though. A lot of new parts. The new driver for the 10, Josh Berry, is going to be coming in. You have Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece, who are relatively new to the Stewart Haas Racing block. Josh Berry, he is older. He is in his 30s, but the question is, can he translate that leadership and the experience that he has in the late models into the Cup Series?
success.
And he can wind up being the oldest Cup Rookie of the Year since Juan Pablo Montoya way back in the 2000s. So next year's going to be an odd year. So anyway, all right. It's time to move on to our final news segment of the 2023 season. All right, we got a handful of news items to wrap up this year on. First off, did you get a chance, Jared, to see the Mustang Dark Horse body?
No.
That was unveiled. You didn't? Okay. So, yeah.
I was traveling to the track.
Okay, that same thing. Okay. So, yeah, Ford will be debuting a new body next year in the Cup Series, the Mustang Dark Horse. I saw a picture of it earlier. There's more sharply defined body for sure. It's not.
We'll see how that goes. As I made mention to you pre-show, that Ford only won 8 races this season, and that's the least of the three manufacturers. And a lot of their ones, you know, as made mention, it's been those shorter type of tracks. So, I mean, if they can get some aero advantage at those bigger tracks, they're going to be in contention. Watch out.
So, but yeah, also Toyota's also getting a new body, but they haven't announced that yet. But no, 7th generation Mustang, that's the body style that will be on the track for Ford next year. Second item, so in Steve Phelps and Steve O'Donnell, the president of NASCAR, and O'Donnell's the
operations,
so they gave their state of the sport press conference on Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't there for that?
Yeah, I was there for that.
Oh, you were there. Okay. So there wasn't a lot of, like, definitive factual statements that were said in that press conference. There was one. The one that stood out to me was NASCAR. They confirmed they're still planning on building a short track in Fontana on the site of the track formerly known as Auto Club Speedway. There's just not a timetable yet.
Yeah.
Due to inflation, cost of inflation, which I don't know. I mean, they sold the land that the track, that, you know, the part of the track stood on for a lot of money. But my understanding.
Well, it's going to take a lot of money to build a track.
Well, my understanding was they were actually using that money to, like, pay off some of NASCAR's debt instead of building a brand new track.
It is what it is. It's sad to see it go, and it's finally happening. Let's say the sport dress was kind of interesting. Some of those interesting quotes of, like, C. Phelps was saying that we're not a soap opera. This playoff thing is not gimmicky. But, yeah, it's still sad to see it go. It's interesting to see and hear him sit down, talk about the sport overall.
So just since you were there, you were in Phoenix. Like, what were your impressions of that press conference and what –
There was a lot of hard-hitting questions, honestly. There wasn't, like, softballs being thrown at Steve Phelps and O'Donnell because they, you know, there was a lot of things that were going on, officiating, the playoff structure. There's a lot of questions that are going to be heading into 2024 that, you know, a lot of issues are in the minds of people in NASCAR, of, like, how to more or less fix the sport and what can be done to make sure that the true champion's crowned. I think in the sense that's never going to happen because you can always change the rules and the systems. That's how it's made. But how do we get where it's actually someone that is well-deserving?
All right.
Track news again. We got North Wilkesboro.
Yes. North Wilkesboro, the track that wouldn't die. the track that posted on videos and pictures on social media over the last 2 days, the track is currently being repaved. So we got to enjoy one NASCAR weekend on not the original pavement, but
the older surface.
The older surfaces. So this is the first time that's been repaved since 84, I think.
It's been a long
time. It's been a very long time. Next year when NASCAR goes back there for the All-Star weekend, they'll be driving on a brand spanking new asphalt. Hopefully that results in, you know, a little bit better racing than what we got this year. Some more better battles for the lead. But yeah, it looked good. So I can't wait to see what we get out of that. Final news item is a little bit of news that Front Stretch broke exclusively this weekend in Phoenix. A guy named Frankie Muniz, who has been in the ARCA series this year, is moving on up to the Xfinity series. Where will he be racing?
He'll be with RSS Racing. It's going to be looking at a full-time ride. There is discussions that he's going to be part-time in another series as well. But it's going to be the Xfinity series is going to be the main gig. The announcement is going to be in, like I said, it was going to be a couple weeks after Phoenix. So, timeline not set on that, but Frankie Muniz is a done deal to go race for RSS Racing next year. And from what I've heard, that Ford will at least bring some support to the table for that team and Frankie. So I think it made sense for both sides, Frankie trying to move up and RSS Racing trying to get funding. They've had Joe Graff Jr. and Kyle Sieg in the car, still questionable plans with Joe Graff Jr. and even Kyle Sieg, who this is the family team car of RSS Racing.
Whose main driver is Ryan Sieg.
Ryan Sieg, yes. Ryan Sieg's already announced his plans, but everyone else is up in the air, but it will be Frankie Muniz driving for RSS Racing next season.
And so the two headline names in the rookie class for the Xfinity Series next year will be Malcolm in the Middle and Haley Deegan. So it'll be a weird year in the Xfinity Series with Frankie Muniz.
Celebrity pro racing at his finest. The former Monster Energy girl versus former actor.
She wasn't, I mean, she's sponsored by
Monster. Yeah, she was applied to, yeah.
So she wasn't, but she wasn't, she wasn't like one of the pit road girls.
No, she tried to get in there, but.
She did?
Yeah, it was on her Twitter bio. Applied to be a Monster girl, but ended up racing.
Oh, okay. Did not know that. How about that? But anyway, all right. Time for our final segment of the 2023 season. Where me and Jared will talk about our favorite moments of the 2023 season. All right, it's been 9 months, and this is episode 34 of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. But it's time to close up shop. On this very long, eventful season. Jared, a lot of stuff happened this year. Went to new cities. We went to tracks that we thought were dead, but were brought back to life. And then we crowned a new champion. Over the season, after the season started in February, it's now November, what are the moments that have stood out to you that you'll put away in your 2023 memory box?
I gotta say Pocono, the race with Denny Hamlin and Kyle Larson. Hamlin doing the good old sliding glide up there, trying to take the race lead, and Kyle Larson was upset about that, and Cliff Daniels was really upset about that. I think that was just an iconic race where Hamlin just really leaned into his villain arc in that race after it. What, are you going to boo my rock? Hamlin's just been, he's an interesting specimen in this, the love him or hate him type of philosophy. But he showed off his skill set, though, in that race and trying to race in this next-gen car. And he beat Larson to it and, made those iconic quote right there.
Don't forget Bristol.
I know the Bristol one where
I beat your favorite driver.
Yeah.
Oh. But Denny Hamlin,
is he wrong though? That's the question. If you're an anti-Denny Hamlin person, he was not wrong in that scenario. But if your favorite driver was Ryan Blaney did beat Denny Hamlin for the championship though.
Yeah. But Denny Hamlin became the main villain of the story this year,
and Kyle Busch became the fan favorite.
No, not a fan favorite. It's still like There's still 50-50 and saying,
remember, he got the same amount of views that Denny Hamlin does now. That is a vast improvement right there, Daniel.
But just saying it's 50-50 for Kyle, that's an improvement.
Yeah.
Saying it's 50-50 cheers and boos, because just 2 years ago, he was still getting just pretty much mostly boos. So just a bizarre year on that front. Denny Hamlin becomes the black cat, embracing the black cat, and Kyle Busch is transitioning into being
the wily veteran that's learned from experience.
Some of my favorite moments. Number one, the Chicago race. I got to attend that. The energy, even after a torrential downpour for hours, which made everyone fear that the race would somehow get canceled or pushed back to Monday. Ugh. I'm so glad that race went off. And then you have Shane Van Gisbergen. I should have practiced it. But SVG winning in his first career NASCAR Cup start, and the way he did it, charging up through the pack to get the lead and get the win. Just the mob scene around him on the streets of Chicago. Then finding out how many people watched the race.
It got back to the roots of it's an event. Race is an event. That's what it needs to be.
It was incredible. We're going back next year. Hopefully it doesn't rain. It's actually going to be a shorter race, probably the distance it should have been originally. That's my number one. But other moments like Ryan Blaney winning the Coke 600, emotional win for him after not going basically more than a year without a win, going up into the stands, doing what
that was rain delayed as well too.
Was it?
Yes. There was rain that was a big issue. It wasn't rain delayed, the Xfinity race was, but there was a lot of rain that weekend.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I remember that because they finished the Xfinity series race while Ryan Blaney was doing those press conference.
Okay. But yeah, him going up into the grandstands just like his Penske teammate Joseph Newgarden did after winning the Indy 500 earlier in the day. That was just a feel-good win for the year. What else for you?
I mean, overall, I think there's been a lot of stuff that's gone on. You've got the emergence of William Byron, A.J. Allmendinger's emotional win at the Roval, mm-hmm. Kurt Busch being emotional with Tyler Raddick winning at COTA.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of those little moments that add up.
Yeah. Like I already mentioned, North Wilkesboro, mm-hmm. another race I got to go to. Two years ago, there's no way on God's green earth I would have thought I would be in North Wilkesboro, North Carolina, covering a race at North Wilkesboro.
A NASCAR race.
But I did it. The place was jam-packed. I've never seen a full racetrack in person for a truck series race. Yes, was it only like 35,000 people fewer than there was at
but
the
still,
Daytona?
But still,
the optics of it were just mind-blowing. I felt like I was back in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
peak NASCAR. It was just, and then the day of the race, they had concerts and stuff. The fan midway was packed. It was invigorating. It was like, when NASCAR can be at its best, this is it.
Mm.
And the fact that it happening is still unbelievable. And we're going back, and I hope that event can keep that energy going for years to go, because we all know special things, they lose their luster after three years.
Yeah, it was going to be a test for North Wilkesboro and the Chicago Street Course.
Yeah.
Those are two new events that had some luster on it, and they were billed as events. That's the big thing. They weren't just billed, we're just going to Texas Motor Speedway for the All-Star Race. This was an event. Here you're coming back. Here's a story. Chicago Street Course. We're racing in a historic place of the streets of Chicago. Then you have North Wilkesboro. We brought this track from the dead. That is what kind of needs to propel NASCAR forward is the event-based type of things, is that you're selling an event and it's an immersion experience throughout the whole weekend.
All right. I think, unless you have anything else you want to add, Jared.
I think that's good.
I think.
Well, we've been on this ride for quite a while.
So, yeah.
We need to shut off the ignition. And
time for the cool down lap.
Yeah, cool down lap. So thank you guys.
But no, yeah, thank you for everyone who's listened and put up with us.
Yeah.
for 9 months, the longest season in NASCAR. But we were glad to be able to do this on a week-to-week basis. The third iteration of the show. So it's been a fun ride this year. We hope to come back again next year, better than ever, do some things that we should have done this year. But yeah, we hope to be back here come February to bring you more NASCAR shenanigans on a dropping.
Usually they call that coverage.
Sure. NASCAR coverage here at Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. But yeah, I'm Daniel McFadden, signing off for the 2023 season. You can follow me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden. You can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com.
And they can find me at Real Jared Haas on the app called X, formerly known as Twitter.
All right. That will do it for us for 2023. Again, we hope to see you again in 2024. Have a great offseason, everyone.